This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tatum fires over Sabonis. It's a four-point play opportunity, Jason Tatum is clutching his right ankle. This is not what the Celtics or anybody else wants to see.
High noon, Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. It's a Wednesday. It's a Celtics Wednesday, which means it's time for Pure Hoops with Terp, Justin Turpin of WEEI.com. Terp, what's up?
What's up, guys? What's going on?
Well, injuries, concern right now for the squad, or everybody going to be all right?
Particularly with Jason Tatum
Brown? Let's start with Tatum and then go to Brown and then I guess anybody else.
I don't think there's really any concern with Jason. It's a sprained ankle. Like, it happens all the time in basketball. He's probably had dozens of these throughout his playing career, so there's really no concern with that. And he was actually, did you guys see he was on the Kelce Brothers podcast?
I saw the promotion for it.
Scheduled to be on there. Happened?
Dropped today, And he was saying how he's still, you know, he's young, so he bounces back a little faster. So I think the one thing that kind of sucks about it is it happens right when he's playing the best basketball of his season. Like, and I'm not worried about it knocking him off his rhythm. Like, we've seen this continuously with him, that he can just bounce back and slide right back in. But it's just a sprained ankle. Like, that's really all it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you see him, like, rolling around in pain, I think it enhances it a little bit, some fear there. But, I mean, he's fine. It's just a sprained ankle.
Did you think it was dirty?
I did, but it's a basketball play. I think it was more reckless than it was dirty, if that makes sense. I think there's a difference between the two. Like, he was trying to make a play in the ball, and it was just a reckless closeout. I wouldn't call it dirty, per se.
What about Jaylen Brown?
See, that's one that I'm a little bit more interested to see, because he's clearly dealing with something. Like, the Celtics put out a press release on it saying that he was going to miss a couple games with that bone bruise. And the thing is with Jaylen is I think he's really looking at this 65-game threshold. Yeah. He has to play 8 of the final 10. And when you're looking at the guys that have already been disqualified, the guys that are already ineligible, he has a legitimate chance to steal an All-NBA team here. And for him being such a prideful individual and really caring about the legacy he's leaving and all that, I think that's important to him. And I don't blame him for wanting to go all in and trying to get All-NBA this year, because this is a year he can really go and get it. And when you're talking legacies, like, that matters when you're talking about Hall of Fame or whatever it may be.
So you think he's All-NBA, Keith?
So I think you got to look through it, like Terp was saying, and of the guys that qualify or don't qualify, you're talking about 15 players, and is it still two guards, two forwards?
It's positionless now.
It's now positionless. Okay. So I knew the All-Star game, they changed it, the forward, backcourt, front court.
You said earlier when we were talking about Durant. Like,
I think he's going to be
all-NBA. You think Durant is going to be all-NBA?
I do.
So, like, Durant over Jalen. Like,
there's two teams, though.
I just wonder, he feels fringy would be my point. So, like, to play in the games and, like, quote-unquote rush it to hit that threshold, like, I have no problem with it, but I wonder if he's going to get what he wants at the end of the day. I wonder if he even is All-NBA.
Well, just to have his name in there, I think matters. I think
it's a great honor. I think it's a good distinction. I think I always point to it when we're comparing players. Just a minute ago, we were comparing, you know, Durant and Giannis. One of the first things you look at is, like, All-NBAs.
And he was barely snubbed last year. Like he almost got it last year.
Fourth team,
right. I think it does matter to what he did last year. I think there is some sort of like reputation that comes with winning Eastern Conference and NBA Finals MVP. I know it's not supposed to factor into this year, but seeing what he did, like there is some sort of reputation that comes with that that might get considered, although it shouldn't when deciding these these regular season awards. So he could definitely slide in there. I mean, he was an all-star, so when you're windling down the pool there, like he's definitely going to get consideration. And again, with just like with who's already disqualified, and I don't have the list in front of me, but like he can definitely get an All-NBA team.
Because 65, you said, is the number? So, yeah, I'm just trying to look at some
of these
guys.
There's like 10 games left, right? So if anybody else is going to rush to get there, like Jaylen, add roughly 10 to their total.
Because the first team is going to be pretty eerily similar to last year, don't you think? It'll be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jokic, who are fighting for the MVP. It'll be Giannis and Tatum. And then, I mean, Luka was last year, so it won't be Luka first team, but maybe like Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah, so just a couple, like Wemby, Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, Luka, Kawhi, Joel Embiid.
Is LeBron going to get there?
Oh, that's good. He's not listed on this list that I have right in front of me, but he has missed time here and there throughout
the
year.
He's already at 60 games played.
Okay, so LeBron will. So, but like that is a lot of good quality players that are off the board. Which
so it's something to shoot for, but like I don't think they're going to put him out there.
Even if it's third team, like all NBA still
all NBA. No, just you make it. That's great. It's a good distinction, but I'm just saying as far as the team is concerned and like his health is still number one,
for sure.
Most important thing.
For sure. And the benefit for them is if they're going to have two games at the end of the year against Charlotte. So they'll play Charlotte, and it's not a back-to-back, but they'll play them two consecutive games in the 81 and 82. So, I mean, maybe he tries to gut it out, play eight straight here, take the final 2 days off, and then have a couple days off between the play-in, when the play-in tournaments are being played between round one. So maybe he does that, but I also think like they're obviously, and he's well aware of it too, that his health is number one priority.
Pure Hoops with Terp every Wednesday, high noon here on Jones and Keefe. Cleveland won last night. So the Celtics are back to 5 games back at Cleveland with whatever it is, 10 or so to go. Is there any realistic chance with how well they're playing and how easy the schedule is? You just detailed the two with Charlotte. There's like one real game left against Memphis. Is there any chance they can still catch Cleveland, or is that dead?
No, I think that's dead.
Cleveland's not going 5-5 or whatever.
I was starting to like look into it a little bit.
They're 6-4 over their last 10.
Yeah, they lost 4 straight last week. So I started to look at it there when they lost the 4 straight. But, I mean, they've just been so consistently dominant this year. And also, does it make sense for the Celtics to go all in when Jaylen's dealing with something? Now Jason has the sprained ankle.
Yeah, but like with their schedule, I don't even think they need to.
They don't need to go.
Well, they're obviously going to try to win every game. So if it comes naturally, it comes naturally.
Well, yeah.
And maybe if there's a push at the end, like, oh, you know, maybe this matters, Cleveland. It's only 1 or 2 games towards the end of the year. Maybe you go in for it. But like they've been perfectly fine. They've played 8 of their 12 games this month with 2 or more players of their top 6 out.
Right.
And they're 8-0 in those games. So like I said, with the schedule being what it is, they could very well just stay hot and win out and make it interesting. But I don't see Cleveland going another 4-game losing skid like they did last week anytime this season.
Any guys outside of the top 6 or even top 7 you think are making a case to maybe even play in the playoffs? Or is it just a matter of, hey, there's nobody, so somebody needs to step up right now?
I mean, the top 9 is the top 9.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's obviously the top starting 5. Then you got Al Horford, Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard, and Luke Kornet. Like, that's set. And that's what it's going to look like unless there's any injuries. I mean, obviously the Baylor Shireman thing's been fun. It's been a great story.
Yeah.
But that's more for down the line.
Yeah,
like,
correct.
We'll
that's
see what
for
happens.
Like next year. This
next
a baseline,
year and maybe not even next year. Like depending on the moves they make, like he's eventually going to be in the rotation and contributing, but he's not going to play in the postseason.
It is funny though, like as great as Brad Stevens is at his job, the draft has sort of been like not applicable, right? Like, how is he doing the draft? Like, I don't know. They trade the picks. They don't have picks or they're super late picks. But you're like, if this is one of the guys that he found super late and he's like actually decent, you're like, all right, that's another feather in the cap for Brad.
The thing with that, too, is there's guaranteed money that comes with the first round pick. So when they stuck and picked Baylor Shireman at 30, I was like, well, they must see something, really something here if they're going to willing to take on the guaranteed salary. And granted, it's not much, especially when you're talking about like what Tatum and Brown make, but like it's still guaranteed money. So when they're willing to take that on, you understand that Brad sees something. And I mean, it could be huge, especially with like how tied they are to the financial restrictions and the second apron as of right now. You're going to need someone like that to contribute down the line.
So speaking of that,
any
developing thoughts on the Celtics sale, Wick and Pags, this new, I'm told it's Chisholm guy. I feel like
Bill Chisholm.
That's not the way he should pronounce it. I feel like it should be Chisholm, but whatever.
Take it up with him. Right?
I feel like I don't trust anything about that guy. He's not really from the North Shore like he claims.
He appeared out of nowhere.
Do you really pronounce your name Chisholm? That's by choice. Like Chisholm.
Call me Bill.
But yeah, well, I was the first to do that, I think. Yeah. Any developing stance on the new owner?
I mean, he's doing all the right things right now. He's saying all the right things. It seems genuine when he talks about his fandom, when he talks about how much he loves the team. Like, it all seems really genuine. And that's all he can do right now. Time will tell what happens and how he acts when the $500 million luxury tax ends up on his desk.
I would push back on that. I wonder how genuine it is because it's so much. It's like, I watch
Super
every
fan.
Game.
Love
I
it.
Know who Abby and Forsberg are. And it's like, I get my antenna up about that. I feel like you're laying it on too thick.
I don't like how much you're doing right now.
I mean, it's one way to look at it. I do think it is genuine, though. Like, listening to him talk, I mean, he really does seem excited about it. Even when they're showing the clips of him the other day, just interacting with players pre and post game, like, it really does seem like he's starstruck in a way. Like, it doesn't, like, maybe he didn't think he was going to get the bid. Like, maybe that's part of it. Maybe he's looking at, like, oh, Pags is already in house. Maybe they're just going to go right to him. I think that's what everyone thought. Hell, this guy didn't even have a Wikipedia page.
It's wild.
Nobody knew about him.
That is true. Billionaire coming in by the team. Now, we had the statement from Steve Pagliuca last week that we went over. You also had Wick Rospeck's appearance on the Greg Hill Show and just trying to make sense of what everybody said. I mean, there's really a lot in the interview that Wick had, but then just from the outside trying to read into it, you know, Pags is kind of calling out the new owner in a way. He's taking shots at the current ownership. Like, what do you think of that whole relationship and how it's kind of spun to this spot?
I don't blame him at all for being pissed off.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been with the team since Wick came in. He was part of that big majority ownership group that bought the team.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he was paying more than Wick was, I guess, because
most
not,
of
for sure.
not more Wick's than the Grosbecks, but more than Wick.
More than Wick. Right? So, and for a little while, he boxed him out at the end there when they won the finals. Like, Wick kind of boxed out Steve a little bit. I think Steve probably, like everyone else, again, thought he was going to be the winning bid. He's been a partner with them forever. I mean, it was a fully financed offer. So
I got news for him. I didn't think he was ever going to win the bid. So if he thought so, I don't know what he was thinking, to be honest.
You didn't think so?
No.
He had the highest bid, though. He should have won.
Sure. It turns out Axios said he had the third highest. It was Chisholm, it was another group, and then him.
I wonder,
and so he might have been fully financed and no debt and all these other things, which is what I was going to ask you, but what were you just going
to
say?
I wonder, too, if maybe he didn't agree to the structure of keeping Wick on
for
3 years.
Wow, there you go.
Axios also reported that.
Yeah,
the only group that did that was Chisholm. So,
but I think that's where Irv comes in, is like, sorry, Wick, like, we're taking the best offer. Like, yeah, it'd be great if you can stick around and play governor for a little bit, but we're taking the most money. It's the reason why we're selling the team. And so that was probably a factor. I'm sure Wick was happy with that it didn't go to Pags.
Yeah.
This is how I read it, but I don't think they're leaving money on the table.
No, I definitely don't.
Yeah.
And my question was going to be, do we think Chisholm can round up the money to do this? Because Pags did have that weird line in his statement, and we mocked it. He's like, hey, if it falls through,
I'm your guy.
Like, is there any part of Pags that you think still believes he can get in there and still wind up with the Celtics?
I think so, because the private equity money really complicates things. Like, the NBA has different restrictions against the private equity money, so we'll see what happens with that. There's still a lot that needs to go down for this to be finalized, which is why I kind of found all the media blitz kind of interesting, because it wasn't done yet. You know what I mean? And like, he was talking everywhere and it was kind of a foregone conclusion, but there's so much that has to still happen for this to go through. So until it's done, until this is completely finalized, then Pags is going to believe he has a chance, because his was fully financed. Like, I think that's a big deal that he had a fully financed offer and they're ready. They have a bid already ready to go. So that doesn't mean if it does fall through that it'll just automatically go to Pags. Like you said, he was the third highest bidder. So, I mean, maybe he goes to the person that was above him. But until this is finalized, and he should feel that way, you can't just back off just because it's believed that it's going to go there, right? They're going to stay in the race. And it does suck for Pags, too, that you spend all this time together, spend all this money with this team, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is your last year. Like, that's
it. We're done.
See ya.
It's not your decision at all.
That's terrible.
Done. The other thing that jumped out to me when Wick was talking with Greg and everybody in the morning was, thank God for Brad Stevens, meaning Brad Stevens is going to have a real challenge this offseason. He's like, we'll see what he does in June and July. So obviously there's a lot of talk about the second apron and all the luxury tax, all the money that you're paying on top of whatever your payroll is. But he had a line in there about how you can't the basketball restrictions are too much. He's like, it's not the money. It's the basketball restrictions.
Which is so false.
Well, when you're winning championships and your restrictions are you can't get a mid-level guy who probably wouldn't crack your rotation. You can't do stuff with draft picks and you can't do stuff with like matching. But if your roster's set, shouldn't you just keep paying it?
And that's why I think they're going to do that. I think at least in year one, we'll see what happens down the road. But in year one with Chisholm, I find it hard to believe he's going to come in and just blow this up.
Oh, he'd be an immediate villain. And if he has thick skin, then maybe. But if he doesn't, then yeah, that's probably not your best first move.
It's not like he wasn't aware of this massive historic luxury tax bill when he bought the team. And maybe it's something that him and his other investors looked at like, hey, we're going to have to eat this. Like, we're going to have to just swallow this and deal with the repercussions because if not, we're going to be hated right away. Like, imagine he comes in and just shifts off, like, Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis. possibly after they go back-to-back.
Especially if they win two in a row.
That's
if they
issue.
Win back-to-back and you're like, these guys all want to come back. In fact, these guys are under contract but and we're going to move on from them.
If OKC knocks them off in the finals,
then it's different.
I don't rule off one of those.
I think it's a little different, though.
If they're back-to-back.
If you win two in a row and everybody's under contract, it's insane.
You could have said the same thing about last offseason, though. Had they gotten past Miami and went to the finals, Marcus Smart's probably still here.
100%.
Right.
So, no, I'm just saying, I could see him moving pieces as soon as next offseason. If they win, though,
I'm
with you guys.
Yeah.
You can't do it if you're sitting there going for a Chief Pete. we're about to get into, the Celtics winning three titles in the 80s. No, Celts Pete. What were we calling it the other day?
Seas
Pete.
No, Celtric.
Celtric. Thank you.
That's good.
That is good.
But we did just get Larry Bird in his first championship in Celtic City, Episode 4, which for all the hating I've done, and they dragged their feet way too long getting to Bird, we finally got what I would consider
awesome.
Like an A-plus,
this is great.
Worth watching type of episode. So what'd you think?
I loved it. I mean, just how competitive Larry Bird was, like, really, really stood out throughout that whole thing. Like,
the maniac, Magic Johnson,
genuinely, like, hated each other. Like, they need more stuff like that. They need more rivalries like that. 100%
needs more rivalries.
Genuine hatred. Like, I never really understood.
Well, they developed into friends, but at the time,
the dream team and, like, everything that happened with Magic by the end. Like, that's what you needed. But, like, on the court, those guys hate each other. The only rivalry now is Isaiah, Beef Stewart, and LeBron James. That's all we got now. There are no rivalries.
There's a significant gap between those two, to say the least.
Well, it's because he ran after him one time.
Yeah. It's our GOAT.
It's the GOAT.
LeBron also ruined the league because he has no rivals. He wants to be friends with everybody.
LeBron James.
Early on, Pierce and Garnett hated him, and that was good.
Well, he doesn't want to be friends with everybody. He hates Beef Stew.
He does hate Beef Stew. Yeah. That's because Beef Stew hates him, and it probably kills LeBron at night.
I mean, just
like, what did I do to Isaiah Stewart?
The competitive advantage, too, just like across the board. Like when the small detail in there about how the locker rooms would always be like hot or cold.
Yeah.
And the Celtics locker room window opened, but Red made sure the visitors
open. McHale took a shot at overrated Red, where he said
Red redeems himself, though, with the back-to-back drafts.
Red the coach overrated.
Okay, fine.
I might have to amend my stance a little bit. trading for Parrish and McHale was a decent trade.
That's a good deal.
But, no, and McHale's like, he didn't freeze the other team out. He's like, he never worked in that place.
Yeah.
He's like, the only thing that ever happened is when it got so hot, we could open our window in the locker room. The opposing team could not.
I love when they show up to camp McHale's first year, and they're at a gym that's worse than the Mountain View Middle School gym I played in Goffstown, New Hampshire. I was like, what is this? Like, he's like, we're the Boston Celtics. It's the NBA. And you're at some college I've never heard of playing on these like tiny little hoops.
Hellenic College in Brookline, which I was unaware of.
It was literally a middle school gym.
I also think of...
it had a stage.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was nuts. Well, it plays maybe. It had
the wall of discipline.
Yeah. That's what ML Carr called it. Robert Parrish is like, there was no wall of discipline.
Everyone was on it. It
was a gym of discipline. He was like everywhere we were being
disciplined. So what I do, especially with these like older ones, and I talked about it after episode 3, I think it was, like if there was sports radio or podcast or even Twitter at the time of like Dave Cowens, what a big deal that would have been. Like, hey, quit the team and I was watching the team from the stands and I was back playing again. Like, what's going on? Like, that would have been a whole thing.
Right.
This early 80s run, and obviously we know the years they won, the years they didn't.
Yeah,
but the details
we know how
about
it ends, right.
Bill Fitch. And they went, Red goes to the team and is like, who wants Bill Fitch back? Everybody says no, except for Larry Bird. And then they get rid of him. That's fascinating. And like, imagine covering that at that time.
Well,
so like, if you played it out now, and I don't think it'll happen, but I'm saying the equivalent is Celtics win the title this past year. This year, they fall just short. They lose to a good team. The next year, they fall just short. And then the year after that, they're like, or after that year, they're like, hey, guys, who wants Mazzulla back? And Tatum's like, I want him back. And everyone else is like, no, he's got to go.
Yeah, like,
and then they get rid of him.
Teacher's pet.
And then Tatum's like, screw you guys. You don't really, like, pretty wild. But then, obviously, we know they win it in 84, so it ended up kind of working out
just for them. All the antics. Like, that stuff, Cedric attacking a fan, and then playing the game, finishing the game.
That is a great.
Like, that's insane.
And then he had a great game. They don't win it if it's not for his
right.
game. Yeah.
Danny Ainge getting bitten at the bottom of a pile. Like, imagine any of that stuff happened now. Even a little, we talked about it before, too. Like,
again,
Tommy's doing, I think it was Tommy, or yeah, Tommy Heinsohn's doing, like, an interview when he was still the head coach. He was doing an interview and just, like, starts lighting a cigarette.
Ripping
like,
darts.
Imagine that stuff.
Yeah. Fucking cigarettes. But also, like, storming the court was normal, like, after a win. So after a win, they just rushed the floor.
They beat Philly with the Bird game winner, and people are just all over Bird.
Cedric Maxwell gave a running elbow to a fan in the front row. It stays in the game. Like, all right, guys, cool off. Everybody cool off.
But circling back to, like, how things would be talked about, people, I mean, you know, WEI didn't exist. But how I would have talked about that team. If you win the title in 81, and then in 82 you come up short, in 84, you're 83, you're swept in round two by the Bucks.
By the Bucks.
And you quit on your coach.
Quit?
I'd be like, trade Parrish.
It's
trade
wild.
Like talk radio at the time, and it probably was the discussion at the time. You got to blow this up.
They're 2 years removed from a title and a 61-win season. It looks like it's your league, and you don't even – it's one thing if you lose to the Lakers or you lose to Dr. J. You lost to the Bucks,
right?
In the second round,
swept.
Wild.
Swept by the Bucks.
Yeah, swept by the Bucks.
This is one of the first times too, because one of my critiques of the early episodes was, and it's not like you can do a new interview with Bill Russell or Red Auerbach.
Yeah,
but it's like a lot of it is footage we've seen before. Some of the like practice footage and stuff
that was cool.
I don't know that we've ever seen that. Like I
Larry
have
Bird
never
just seen, lighting everybody up.
Bird lighting up Max in a practice. Yeah. You're like, I've never seen footage like that. So that I'm starting to think there's some actual value to lost footage that's never been seen in this Celtic city, which I appreciate.
I've also thought they've done a really good job of using the archived footage to tell the story. Like, the storytelling throughout the whole thing has been pretty incredible.
Yeah, to use, like, all right, here's some old Jerry West video. Right. Here's some old, you know, obviously before, it's like a lot of Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Red Auerbach, but now even still it's some older interviews.
And they
but,
did get Jerry West before he passed away,
yeah.
So some of that is...
Oh, for
specifically for this documentary. Yeah. They did get him before. But like just the way they've kind of blended it all together has been really entertaining. And the storytelling from the guys, too. Like, Cedric Maxwell did a great job.
Yeah.
Like, telling the story about Bird's.
Max is the best. Yeah.
Bird's first practice. And then they had the footage to accompany it. I'm with you guys. I thought that was the best episode yet.
My thought, too, is when they're showing all, like, the game footage and all, like, the big moments between the Celtics and Sixers or whatever, even their 81 finals. Is Joe Mazzulla must be screaming about not enough threes. Just be like, guys, the line's right there. Because like they make a big deal. They're like, Larry Bird's hit three threes today. And you're like, imagine if Larry just decided
Sam Hauser
to shoot
hits
more
like
threes.
Eight a night.
Would he trade the threes for the fighting, though?
Ooh, that's a good question.
No, I think you'd want
to keep
the fighting in.
He's loving it.
So like, if there's less threes,
hard
you
nips
can
throw for all
punches,
the fights that you saw in that
he's
thing.
All
yeah.
in.
Yeah, that might be the one thing he likes more than threes.
All right.
Grapple.
Pure Hoops with Terp every Wednesday here on Jones and Keefe. I enjoyed that episode of Celtic City. You can check out all his work at Justin M. Turpin on Twitter and, of course, WEEI.com. Terp, we appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, fellas.
Thank you, Terp. All right, we'll get back to your phone calls on Steph Diggs, 617-779-7937. The Patriots finally get their man. We'll get to it.
The Patriots are getting their young quarterback a little bit of help, finally, right? All offseason, we've seen these moves go to the defensive side of the ball. Now they have somebody that Drake May can throw to, at least if Stephon Diggs is healthy. That's a big question for me. He is going to be 32 this season. He is coming off that torn ACL that he suffered in October. You're talking 9 months at minimum before you can really expect him to be on the field, and who knows how much time thereafter before he's really comfortable with that knee. But if you can get him in the building, start that process of developing chemistry with Drake May, of understanding this Josh McDaniels offense, of maybe, hopefully for the Patriots, rubbing off on those other receivers in that room in terms of how to run routes, in terms of what to expect from NFL defenses. These are all things that they can tap into Stephon Diggs' mind for. That is a huge benefit for this Patriots team, a team that was in desperate need of receiver help.
I was Phil Perry discussing the Patriots edition of Stephon Diggs. 3 years, $69
million. Nice.
That's a quote-unquote $69 million. Quote-unquote 26 guaranteed as well to Stephon Diggs. We can get into all of it. What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Keith, I know we're both fans of the signing.
Yeah.
I probably have more questions than you do. But I think we're both fans of the signing in a vacuum. Why do you like it so much?
I love the signing because I, first of all, didn't think it was going to happen. I thought they were going to say, hey, look, we spent a lot of money on Milton Williams and Carlton Davis and a free agency, and like that's all there is, and we're done. It's like, well, you have a glaring need going into the draft, and it's still wide receiver, and you knew that because you were in on Chris Godwin, but then apparently weren't in on anybody else. And there's no perfect player available in free agency, but Steph Diggs was the best at that position, in my opinion, and brought him in for a visit and then left without an offer. And I'm like, oh my God, like they're just doing this again, like with other guys. And it's very Red Sox-like from the last few years. So when they announced the signing, I was shocked. So one, them spending money, whether it's 26, 69, somewhere in between, I don't care. They spent more money than any other team was willing to spend on Steph Diggs, to the point where they convinced him to join a 4-win team from a year ago. So I love that aspect of it, just that they are actually spending money on the team. Also, it is their number one receiver. You can get into the debate on how much he has left in the tank and if he is a one around the league. He's definitely a one here.
Clearly, he's their
best guy.
We
were arguing about it yesterday. You said Kendrick Bourne. I said Pop Douglas. We had a caller that said Kayshon Booty. The fact that there's three people with three different answers on who the number one receiver is proves how bad the room was.
Bad sign.
Terrible. And I know he's not the same guy he was 5 years ago, but Josh Allen went from like so-so quarterback to one of the three best in the league when Steph Diggs joined him. And even if you get a little of that, even if you get a fraction of that to help out Drake May, you're at least throwing him a lifeline here.
Well, and my inclination would be to push back on that and say, yeah, but he went to a young quarterback last year in C.J. Stroud, and Stroud got worse. But if you dig in on the numbers when Diggs played, they're actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, he played half the season.
Reese detailed some of this at ESPN yesterday, and I didn't realize this. Diggs, 31, and he'll be 32 midseason, is still recovering from a season-ending ACL injury that he suffered in Houston's Week 8 game against the Indianapolis Colts on October 27th. Up to that point, Diggs ranked 7th in the NFL in catches, 47, and was 2nd on the Texans in receiving yards, 496. So he's not as explosive as he was. 47 catches is great. 496, not so much. But quarterback C.J. Stroud had a passer rating of 104 and completed 73% of his passes when targeting Diggs. When Diggs was healthy, Stroud benefited as he ranked 6th in passing yards, almost 2,000, and tied for 10th in touchdown passes, 11, through the first 8 weeks of the year. So Stroud was trending towards being a top 10 quarterback. It fell off more when they lost Diggs later in the year. So that is more promising.
They also fired their coordinator. They had a weird thing going on down there.
They fired Slowick, who was great year one, and last year fell in love with handing it to Joe Mixon.
Yeah. And I just think a lot of the guys at the that were available this offseason were also coming off of injuries, because that is one of the concerns with Diggs. So he plays half the season. Right before Halloween, goes down, torn ACL. So you're trying to figure out, all right, how long is that going to be? But Chris Godwin, we were looking at his injuries. Cooper Kupp, we were looking at his injuries. So there wasn't the perfect player out there. We know nobody really wants to play for the Patriots, so you're going to have to make it worth their while, like they did with Milton Williams, like they did with Carlton Davis, and they did it again with Steph Diggs. So I'm not concerned at all about the money, because there was no guarantee they were going to spend any of that on anybody else. So they automatically upgrade the receiver room. You push however you have the guys ranked before, you push them all down one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good sign. It's also a great sign to me, because there was that talk about, well, it's just about the culture. We only want good guys and this, that, and the other thing. Like, man, it's tough to have a great team with just good guys. It's really tough to pull that off.
So,
and it just tells me that here's Mike Vrabel, right? So Bill Belichick didn't love a big-time flashy receiver. It didn't seem like. I guess he's there for 25 years. So there's some examples of it, some examples
not. Yeah, but largely, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
And then Mayo year one, whether it was his call or not, we didn't see it. And now Mike Vrabel, year one, building this roster, starts out by loading up on defense. We're like, all right, here we go. It's going to be all defense. But then gets a pretty big name, productive wide receiver, and they're throwing him some money. So I like the sign of that.
So we both like the signing. You can jump in, 617-779-7937. Do you think this unlocks Drake May? Are you concerned it'll hinder Drake May in any way? Do you think they overpaid? Because we've heard a lot of that today.
Which is a bizarre take on it.
It's perplexing, to be honest. But, you know, perhaps you don't like it as much as we do. You can jump in again. 617-779-7937. So there's a couple of things I find comical here, Keith, that don't really bother me, but they expose the Patriots. You just hit on one. The diva wide receiver. The me, get me my targets receiver. and the culture and the locker room and all these things. That's something all the beat writers are putting out there. The Patriots don't want to bring in a guy like that. So they claimed to care about it. I don't. No. I never did.
No.
I'll take a diva, give me the ball wide receiver on a team like this every day of the week. Maybe if you're contending for a championship, a guy like that can get in the way. When you're a four-win suck-ass team, bring in a guy like that, worry about the consequences later. But they put out there that they cared about it as justification for missing out on all these receivers. Now you're going to bring in this guy? I just find that comical. Mm-hmm. I personally don't have an issue with it, but I find it comical a guy who's on his fourth team and burned it down in Minnesota and Buffalo. And I'd question how well-liked he really was in Houston last year since they didn't bring him back after 1 year.
No, and they went and got Christian Kirk. It's similar to the Rams are like, we're done with Kupp, and then they immediately signed Adams. It's sort of like a bit of a red flag on Kupp. As much as I liked him and still would have taken him and would have been happy with it, but you say, all right, they should know him more than anybody else, so why don't they want him back?
The other thing I find comical, I have zero problem with the contract. I don't care that it's $69 million and 26 guaranteed.
Right.
That doesn't bother me. I think it's comical that the Patriots are really trying to drum it up like it's a big-ticket wide receiver contract. Like, see, we spend.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you, it ain't even $26 million guaranteed. That's going to be tied to per-game roster bonuses and all this. That's the 26 isn't even a real number. Never mind the 69 the Patriots want out
there. It's very Red Sox-like. The Red Sox are getting a lot of credit, and they should, for Crochet, Walker Buehler, and Bregman. But when's Walker Buehler a free agent? Next year.
Yep.
When's Crochet, if they don't get a new deal, a free agent?
2 years.
When's Bregman a free agent? Could be one.
Yeah, it could be this year.
Right? So, like,
at best, it's 3 years.
So, some decent average annual value on Bregman and not bad on Buehler. Crochet's on his old deal. And I'm not trying to, like, take credit away from him, but if one of the arguments was they were cheap, this offseason doesn't necessarily solve it for the Red Sox. Like, I think they're going in the right direction, and maybe they shut us all up and they give Crochet this massive extension. Maybe Bregman opts in the next 2 years. The next thing you know, you end up paying him $120 million over 3 years. So that's real money. The Patriots are spending money this offseason, but also they kept not spending money for so many years.
Seriously.
They kept telling us it was the next year is the next year. So I'm not going to, like, completely let them off the hook for all that, but I was definitely surprised that they were willing to go to this degree to get Steph Diggs.
$10 shake makes my point for me in the Twitch chat.
Yeah.
If it's tied to roster bonuses, it's not guaranteed. Yeah, no, exactly.
That's what you're saying.
The Milton Williams number was reported as a much higher guarantee. Once you dug in on the details, you found out it wasn't.
Yeah,
the teams, the agents, they'll trumpet up guarantees that aren't real guarantees. So we're going to find that out. I bet it's not even $26 million guaranteed. But I don't even care. I just think it's funny the Patriots are trying to drum it up like they paid through the nose for a number one wide receiver.
But this is go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what I like about the deal is that Vrabel may actually be paying off on what he promised, which is we're going to fill out the receiver room, the tackle room. We're going to take away as many needs as possible and let the draft, especially at four, come to us.
Yeah, no, this is good.
A move like this goes a long way in the receiver room. I don't think they're done. But I also don't think they need to force it at pick 4 or even 38. But like with Travis Hunter, for instance, I don't think you need to force it. You can say, we're going to bring him in. He's the best player available. Maybe he plays more receiver. Maybe he plays more corner. But we now have a guy like Diggs where we can figure that out.
Yeah.
You still need to sign a tackle. Hopefully it's Tyron Smith. I don't really even know who else is out there. But they just took a big step closer to actually letting the draft come to them, which I think is important.
I also think a lot of the things that we've heard kind of leading up to this and then immediately after, you can't share this. So there was, hey, nobody wants to come here, right? Like DK Metcalf famously doesn't want to come here.
Right.
But apparently he wants to go to Pittsburgh. But let's just say nobody wants to come to New England.
Is that a drive-by, Keith?
No, drive-by.
Oh, okay.
Quick drive-by. Look out.
Interesting.
So everybody's saying nobody wants to come here. You can't then also say you overpaid for him.
Right.
Because you'd be like, yeah, nobody wants to come here if all the deals are equal.
Right.
But you're going to have to give him more money to convince him to come.
Or, like, for instance, the nuance on Metcalf. Well, Metcalf didn't want to come here. Yeah, probably because you weren't offering him $150 million.
You didn't offer him anything.
You didn't
they didn't offer him anything.
You didn't want to give him the contract that he wanted, so he didn't want to. Like, I think the Patriots can technically be true saying he didn't want to come here.
Dude, there's no way.
But
did
he not want to come here because it snows? Or does he not want to come here because the money wasn't there?
Yeah.
My guess is the second thing.
No, and the other thing is, and we've talked about Travis Hunter a lot in the last month or so, and I would take him, I'd take him number one overall. But at number four, if he's there, there had been a lot of these draft guys, like Daniel Jeremiah and a few others, that were saying, if Travis Hunter goes to the Patriots pre-Steph Diggs.
He's a wide receiver.
He's a wide receiver. Yep. And I was like, well, hold on a second. Like, I want him to play both. I think by adding Steph Diggs, and hell, even Carlton Davis, it might say, we could try it. We could try him playing both ways. It doesn't have to be 100% of the snaps both ways. And we still have a good receiver out there. We still have two good corners out there, even if he's not getting every single rep on.
No, it's a great point. It just allows them to, again, let the draft come to them. And with a player like Hunter specifically, see what you got. And you don't have to force him to one side of the football or the other. Or to your point, maybe it gives you the flexibility to play him more as he played at Colorado on both sides of the football.
Yeah.
My questions almost entirely revolve around Diggs and when he'll play and what he'll look like when he comes back. And we kind of sort of got the answer to one of those. Schefter said he's on track, quote unquote,
hell yeah,
to return week one. I am skeptical about that, but if I'm wrong, I like this signing even more than I do today. I want whoever the receiver is to have a training camp and grow with May and be out there week one. I think that would be ideal. I think you can kiss training camp goodbye with Diggs.
Yeah.
But week one, if he's out there, I won't really kick and scream about it. How he looks when he comes back from the injury, we're just not going to know.
Yeah.
I know ACLs are not what they were 10, 20 years ago, but for a guy in his 30s, I'd still like to know how explosive he is when he comes back, especially if he's on the early side of that timeline.
Randy Moss didn't play. It wasn't coming off an ACL, but he didn't play in any training camp.
Correct.
It was also Moss and Tom Brady, so it's hard to compare anybody to that.
Some believe they were kind of hiding him in that training camp to not let the league know what they were on.
It worked until it didn't, but it did work for a while. And so he blows out his ACL at the end of October. Week one is September 8th.
This would be like 10 months.
Yeah. So, I mean, that sort of timeline.
10, 11 months, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's... Yeah, right, because it's early September. So, yeah, it's like on the 10-plus months. So we've seen guys come back from it quicker. We've seen guys take a little bit longer. So it's still very much up in the air. But even if you sort of – if he's already ready by week one to sort of ease into it, so maybe he's not full strength week one, but maybe 3-4 weeks into the season, he's out there and then he's kind of ramping up the reps, and then I think you're in good shape.
If he's out there week one, I'll stand down. My big concern is I don't think he's ready week one. I think he's on PUP and he's not playing in the first few games. That's my big fear with Diggs. Other than that, I don't really have any complaints. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. We'll get back into May's development. And does a guy like Stephon Diggs help or hinder that development? Plus, Rich Keefe has some TV recommendations. We'll get to him next.
All right, back here on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. Jones, every once in a while, I like to update everybody on a little, what are you watching on TV? Baseball season about to start, but there's still plenty of shows out there that you can spend your time with. A couple of shows that just ended. One, of course, being Severance, which I think is going to be tough for any show in 2025 to top. Season 2 came to an end last Friday. 10 episodes, Apple Plus. Highly recommended.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been listening to all the Dork recap episodes of Severance, and the grades that you and Danielle and Davey and Billy D gave to Severance are just off the charts, yes.
You can't really beat it.
Can't come with higher marks than that.
You can maybe tie it. Yeah. I don't know if you can beat it. Also, we talked briefly yesterday in the grab bag for documentaries, the Karen Reed documentaries on HBO. And did you see this update from Karen Reed, by the way?
No.
I just saw this on Twitter. Karen Reed has added a juror from the first trial to her legal team.
To her legal team?
That's what it says. WBZ has that report.
I have not seen
that. I don't know.
Well,
I don't really know much.
And they basically had Turtle Boy working for their legal team. So I think you can do a bunch of
that's
that.
That's also true.
But anyways, I had not seen that.
So those are both in the books. All right, as for shows on right now, Daredevil Born Again. It has been a little bit of a slow burn. This was the superhero show that was on Netflix. Then it got canceled, and then it got kind of rebooted here on Disney Plus. I love the character. I love the actor. Good stuff. They had two episodes last night for some reason instead of just the weekly episode stuff. But it's good. It's like six through, I think there's 9 episodes total. So I like that.
They didn't want to give you an episode on April Fool's Day. They had to double up.
Maybe.
Give everybody the holiday off.
That could be.
Yeah.
Another show, which I knew was coming out this year. I forgot when it snuck up on me. There are two episodes available right now. David Blaine, : Do Not Attempt.
Okay.
It is a David Blaine show. Are you familiar with David Blaine?
Yeah, sure.
So I love David Blaine. I love magic. Heaven to me would be somebody doing card magic for eternity. Just one card trick after the other. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Wow.
So he
I didn't know that about you.
I love card tricks.
Big magic guy.
Love magic. Love illusion.
Same.
Wonder.
Really?
Love it.
It's the best.
There's a show, Penn & Teller?
Yeah. Of course.
Penn & Teller do Fool Us.
Yep.
Basically, magicians come out, they do their trick, and then Penn and Teller tells you why they know or how you pulled it off.
Oh,
the only issue with it is they tell you in a language where, unless you're a magician, you wouldn't get it.
You haven't picked up on the lingo yet?
I haven't picked up on the lingo yet, but it's pretty odd. No, I'm with Keith. I'm mesmerized by
it. Inside magic. Well,
I would DVR America's Got Talent just to get two magicians in card tricks.
Yes. You're scouting for the next Penn and Teller.
Correct. I love it.
Yeah, I got it.
So David Blaine does those, and he's made a few different shows. He has the one when, remember, he's in Harrison Ford's house, and he like tells him to get out of his house because he like somehow put the card like inside of an apple or like something insane. He's like, peel that orange. He's like, but a card. The two of clubs falls out. So I love that. So he also has one where he's inside the Dallas Cowboys locker room, and these guys all think he's like a wizard, and they're just like running away from him. Like he does, he like levitates. It's nuts.
Wow.
So anyway,
so that's better than the O's the Mentalist or whatever, that guy who I've seen like videos from. We're in an NFL locker room.
Forget that guy. Yeah. This is where it's at. David Blaine is where it's at. He does a lot of stunts that like don't really do it for me as much. He had the one where he like held his breath for like an hour into like a water tank. He did one where he did the Houdini, like catching a bullet. He did one where he was just like, wasn't he just like standing up really still for a while? Like he's done like these weird ones. So anyway, this is a show where he's going around the world learning magic from other people and then also doing some of his own stuff. Here's the problem.
Okay.
Two episodes in, a lot of snake stuff.
Oh, no.
Is snakes out there this big?
Yeah, the first episode, they're like chasing an anaconda. I'm like, well, I'm fast forwarding this. I'm like, I can't watch this. And then the second episode, he's like battling a cobra. I'm like, for God's sakes. But he does some cool stuff. He did one thing, they like light him on fire and he like jumps off a bridge. It's, you know, he's wacky.
Good stuff.
It's good stuff. It's David Blaine.
Just too many snakes.
Yeah, they got to ease up with the snake stuff.
Okay.
Two episodes in, like multiple snakes.
If you're a snakeophobe, maybe out. Skip it, but otherwise,
maybe out.
Good
a
stuff.
A lot of snakes in the show you've been watching lately.
That is true.
It is.
Does Keith Sneaky like snakes now?
I'm terrified. So there was also like a 10-minute scene 2 weeks ago in The White Lotus that I had to like block my eyes. So here's a show. This is a polarizing show. People love The White Lotus. I don't know why.
Yeah, I heard a lot of this in the crossover today. You were down on it. Everybody else very, very into it.
So it seems like Courtney likes it. It seems like Greg was, but Greg knew where I was coming from, where I'm like, nothing happens.
Right.
He's like, yeah.
This is true.
So here's my thought on The White Lotus, at least for season three. It has a great cast, and they shoot it in Thailand, and so they're at like a resort, and like it looks cool. So like the actors are great. And it's a cool setting, so maybe people are fooling themselves into that it's a good show.
Seasons one and two were real slow burns, and then they got really good in like the last two or three episodes. I'm pretty sure that's how they're treating.
This is
like, because something crazy's gonna happen.
This is moved on from slow burn to a slog.
Okay,
a slow burn. At least something happens at the end. It's a slow burn to something, or it's just a slog, and that's what we're dealing with right now. So I won't spoil anything, but I'll just say. Well, it was a minor spoiler, I guess, for the last episode. There was a scene where something happens, but then it's actually like a dream. And so when something happened...
So Curtis was complaining about this. Yeah.
So when something happened, I looked to me and my wife both go like, finally, something. And then it was like, oh, no, that actually didn't happen.
And you're like,
I wish that did. I wish that did happen.
So you wasted an episode on a dream. Great.
So there's like two more episodes to go. It's a terrible show, and I'm not sure anybody why they're watching it. I will continue to watch it just because I'm a completionist.
Did you say, this is what I was going to ask. Did you ditch out a one and two?
Actually, you're right.
So you're not,
I guess I'm not.
It's going to be the third year in a row you're going to ditch out?
I think I gave like one episode in on both. This one I gave like two or three, and then I was like.
More of a commitment.
It's got Walton Goggins, Michelle Monaghan, Parker Posey, Carrie Coon. I'm like. I'm in. Sam Rockwell.
You told me they like watch Southern Charm to prep for the roles too.
For the Parker Posey family.
Which brings me you can speak to an interest level. Yeah.
Jennifer Coolidge definitely did carry the first two seasons though. And now she's not in this one.
Yeah, right. Right. Yellow Jackets. Speaking of people eating each other, I have not watched it yet. I'm waiting to binge. There's like a couple episodes left. This is also, I've complained about this. You have Paramount. You don't get it. You need Paramount Plus Showtime.
Oh, yeah.
Showtime's not even its own
app. I guarantee
you
the Jones household has it.
You probably do.
Yeah.
We need that password because I cannot watch this Yellow Jacket. So anyway, apparently it's not good, though. It's not very good.
Oh.
But I watched it. The first season was tremendous television. The Studio just debuted last night. This is the Seth Rogen, Catherine O'Hara show. It runs like a studio, as it turns out. It's a comedy, though. It's supposed to be pretty good.
What kind of studio?
Like a TV studio, I believe.
Right?
I TV
see.
Or movie
Not
studio.
Like a Studio 54, like a TV
no,
studio.
No, no, no. I don't think it's quite that risque.
Got it.
No,
okay.
No. There's a show called Residence, which Nick watched, or you're halfway through?
Watching.
Watching.
There's 8 episodes. I'm 3 in. Apparently, it hits a little bit of a lull, though, soon.
Yeah,
so
boy.
I'm kind of worried.
It's billed as, like, only murders in the building, but the building is the White House.
Oh,
it's paced like it. It's shot like it. It's basically the same thing, just
okay.
In the White House.
And I haven't started watching it yet, but people like Adolescence. It's only a few episodes on Netflix. I think every episode's like a one shot. That's what I heard. I could be wrong, but and then of course Celtic City, which we have discussed. That is 4 episodes into their 9-part series.
Yeah. 4 episodes in, only one on Bird so far.
Yeah.
And then we should be getting into the mid-80s Celtics and Lakers next week.
And then lastly, coming up in April, The Last of Us and Andor both return. It'll be the final season of Andor. It'll be season 2 of The Last of Us, 2 shows I am very much looking forward to.
Okay. TV recommendations from Rich Keefe. You're a fan of the David Blaine Do Not Attempt. Just
cool it with the snakes.
Chill
cool,
out with the snakes.
Maybe cool it a little bit.
Pythons, rattlesnakes, cobras, black mambas.
It's everywhere. I couldn't believe how many snakes.
It's quite a few.
Yeah.
617-779-7937.
A house filled with snakes.
You can yell about the White Lotus complaints, which I see the Twitch chat doing a sizable amount of. And
is it split or are people they like it?
I think people like it. It seems.
They don't know why. They've been brainwashed.
Yeah,
it's fine.
It's on Sundays.
You like what
on
you
HBO.
Like. I just don't understand how.
So you just kind of follow the herd on that.
Sunday
one.
At 9.
Yeah,
HBO,
exactly.
It's got to be good.
By the way, we'll get back to Steph Diggs as well. Is he going to help or hinder Drake May's development? We'll do that with your phone calls next.